Greetings, shalom. Welcome back to our ongoing series of study of the Book of Ruth, Megillat Rut. We are now in the middle of the third chapter, Perek Gimel, after having completed the introductory piece to this monumental story of Ruth encountering Boaz, as we will see forthwith. The introduction, which takes up the first five psukim, which is Naomi's instructions to Ruth. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, the kriuchtiv, the differential between the way that the text is written and the way that it is read and understood, indicates that there is a tension between what Naomi wants for Ruth and directs her to do for herself, and what Naomi really would like herself to be doing. Yaradati alagoran shachavti, I would be like to be the one who is there. Ruth, in kind, in Pasukei, in verse 5, responds and says, "Kol asher tomri easeh, everything you've done, I will do. And the word elai is something of a shadow word, which is only read, but not stated, not written in the text. And the notion is that I have control over everything that you've told me to do. I have no control over what Boaz will do. And now let's pick up the story. Vatered hagoren. She went down to the granary, to the threshing floor. Clearly the threshing floor was not at the height of Beit Lachem, it was down the hill. Vatas kechol asher tzivata chamotah. She did everything that Naomi told her to do. Now, at this point, we regard that as being to bathe, put on oils and perfumes, put on nice clothes, go hide, don't show yourself to Boaz until he has gone to sleep. She waits there, she does all of that. However, we will see that she does, shall we say, a bit more than Naomi directed her to do, which ultimately subverts the entire mission and turns it inside out from a mission on behalf of Ruth's personal welfare to be wedded to a man of security, of Boaz, turns it from that into what Ruth has been angling for all along, and we will see that right away. Vayocha Boaz vayesht, Boaz ate, and he drank, and again, it's exactly as Naomi told Ruth it would be, that Boaz was with the granary and with the winnowing the barley, and afterwards he stayed there and he had his dinner, vayesht, which means wine, of course, he drank wine, vaytav libo, he was glad of heart. This is the typical description of someone who has had a little bit of wine. As we pointed out in our Esther series, that Achashverosh is never called drunk in the text, but Ketov Lev HaMelech Bayayin in the first chapter, when his heart was glad with wine, which indicates perhaps a loosening of inhibitions. Boaz has some wine to drink before going to bed. Vayavo Lishkav B'Kzeh Ha'arema. He came to lie down at the edge of the pile. Vatavovalat, she came up quietly, secretly. Vatgal margulotav, she uncovered his feet. There are some more modern critics who want to argue that margulot is a euphemism for something else. There's no need to read that into the text at all. Vatishkav, she uncovered his legs and she lay there. Now, you can imagine that this is a very surprising thing for Boaz to discover. He's gone down to the granary alone, he's had his meal, he's gone to bed, and then suddenly there's a woman lying at his feet. It's very bizarre. But first I want to point your attention to what is almost assuredly the key word in this chapter. In the first chapter we dealt with the word lashuv and its 12 instances. In the second chapter we dealt with the word lilaket, to collect, and its 12 instances. Here we have a word that is clearly the key word, and that is lishkav. And the reason that lishkav is such a powerful word is that in Tanakh it has three different meanings, and then a fourth. And all of them are at play here. One or two are the clear explicit meanings, and underneath there's a tension about one of the other ones and perhaps even the fourth. Lishkav in Tanakh, to lie down, refers to a body position, as in b'shoch b'chav kumecha, when you lie down, has to do with being prone. There also is lishkav, which is a more intense form of the same thing, which is to sleep. There is a more intense form of lishkav as sleep, and that is to die. Lishkav im avotav, to lie with your fathers. It's part of a euphemistic way of talking about death. And then, of course, lishkav throughout, for instance, in Sefer Vayikra, in the book of Leviticus, refers to sexual relations. Now, it is clear, here we are in the middle of the night, Boaz, who seems to be a widower or seems to be on his own and doesn't have a family, seems to be. Here's Ruth, who's all alone. Boaz has found Ruth to be very attractive. Ruth now is alone with Boaz on the threshing floor. The sexual tension is very clear here, and we will see it come to a point momentarily. So the word lishkav and all of the tension there between Boaz lying down, Boaz sleeping, what else may happen here, is informing this chapter. Notice that the word lishkav shows up 8 times. And when we finish the chapter, I'll make a brief comment about what the significance of 8 occurrences is, specifically in this context and why it's most appropriate. Vayhi b'chatzi halayla. And came upon a half the night, happened at midnight, is a phrase that shows up only one other time in Tanakh. And every student of Tanakh and everyone familiar with Tanakh immediately recognizes and has all the alarm bells go off. That's the phrase that introduces God's immanent presence in Egypt as the elder, as the firstborn of the Egyptians die, Makat Bechorot, on the 15th of Nisan, in the story of the Exodus. It's the only other place it happens. So, Vayhi b'chatzi halayla, we immediately assume there's going to be something magnificent and something wonderful and something big and something noisy, and in the meantime, it's happening quietly between two people. No one else knows what's going on, but what we also expect, and that is going to happen, is the result of Vayhi b'chatzi halayla will be the onset of redemption, of geula. And that introduces us to the theme which will inform part of the end of this chapter and the first half of the fourth chapter, and that of redemption, but in a very different context. We'll talk about that in the fourth chapter, of what redemption means in Shemot as opposed to what redemption means in Megillat Ruth, Exodus versus Ruth. What happened at midnight? The man started trembling. He started trembling. He realized there's a woman at his feet. He reached out. Behold, there's a woman lying at his feet. Remember, it's absolutely pitch dark. Remember what Naomi told Ruth? See where he lies beforehand, so you can know how to find him. Why is she saying that? Because it's pitch dark. And Boaz, as we assume, a candle or a torch by which to eat, is going to blow it out and go to lie down. So you have to see where he is. It's pitch dark. Vayomer miat, he says to her, who are you? Vatomer anochi Rut amatecha. I am Rut, your maidservant. Ufarastach nafecha al amatecha. And she says to him, take your garment and spread it over your maidservant. Now, what that phrase means is, marry me, take me in and marry me. But it's not the marriage in the modern sense of romance and of star-crossed lovers, as it were, coming together. But rather, it is a woman who says, I'm absolutely vulnerable, I've got no security, please take me in and cover me, protect me. But so far, that's fine, and that fits exactly with what Naomi told her to do. Do all of these things, wait till he's gone to sleep, light his feet, and then he'll tell you what to do. So he told her, he said, who are you? So she had an answer. And she immediately rigs the conversation to go in the direction that Naomi wanted her to go, which is marriage. And then she adds three words, the three words that change the entire chapter, the entire story, and ultimately Jewish history. Because what does she say? Ki goel ata, because you are a redeemer. Now remember back from chapter 2, when Ruth came back and told Naomi that Boaz is the owner of the field where she got to collect, Naomi's reaction was, mi goalenu hu, he is one of our redeemers. Meaning he is one of our kin who has the responsibility of redeeming our property. And therefore, in a sense, it's absolutely right and correct that he be the one to let you into his field and to give you extra food and allow you to, not only allow you, but adjure you to stay in his field for the whole season, because he really does have responsibility to take care of us. She turns to Boaz and says, ki go el ata, which shifts everything. I am not coming to you, Ruth says, because I have a personal interest in you and I'm trying to take care of my own self and get myself married to a wonderful man who is wealthy. I am coming to you because you have a responsibility to redeem your cousin or your brother, whoever it is, whoever Elimelech is, your relative's family, your relative's name. You're a goel. And therefore, taking me will be the closest way you can act to redeem his name. Now, how's that going to play out? We'll see in the fourth chapter. But that's what she presents to Boaz. At that point, had she not said that, had she just said, Anochi Ruta Matacha, I am Rut, your maidservant, spread your garment over me, Boaz could have turned around and said, fine, let's marry, and that would be the end of the story. Instead, she adds three little words, Ki Goel Ata. Two letters, three letters, three letters. Ki Goel Ata, because your Redeemer changes everything. And what is Boaz's reaction? Vayomer. Brucha at ladunai biti. Again, as we've seen throughout Megillat Rut, everyone is blessing everybody else with God's name. Everybody wishes the best for everybody else. Everybody here is wonderful. You are blessed to God. Why? Heitavd chasdecha acharon min harishon. Your latest kindness is greater than your first kindness. And the first kindness is the one that in chapter 2 Boaz related to her when she said, why am I worthy? Why have you recognized me and given me this special treatment? He said, because I know the great chesed you did staying with your mother-in-law and taking care of her after her children died, your husband died, etc. He says, this is a greater chesed. Why? Levelti lachad acharei bachurim, not following the young men. Imdal v'imashir, whether wealthy or poor. In other words, Boaz seems to recognize that Ruth could have married a nice young man, a rich man, a poor man, but she could have had maybe her pick of the men. She's an attractive woman. She's got very fine characteristics. Instead, you came to me. Now, Boaz immediately recognizes that Ruth's coming to Boaz, to him, is not out of a sense of personal attraction, but rather a familial responsibility and loyalty to Naomi. And therefore, her choice to come to Boaz, not as someone for security, but someone for continuing the line and continuing the name of Elimelech that it not be erased, suddenly is a great chesed, and he recognizes it. Ve'atam biti, what does he say to her? Al tir'i, do not fear. Kol asher tomri es selach. Listen to those words. Those are Naomi's words turned inside out. Or shall we say Ruth's words to Naomi. Naomi told Ruth what to do. Ruth said, whatever you tell me, I'll do. Kol asher tomri elai es. Now, Ruth turns to Boaz, and Ruth is now commanding Boaz, subtly, what to do. And Boaz says, kol asher tomri es selach. Everything you've said, I will do for you. Why? Ki odea kol sha'ar ami ki eshet chayilat. We will get back to this at the end of the chapter. Everyone in the gate of my nation, meaning everyone in the city, knows that you are an Eshet Chayil, a valorous woman. Now, we'll talk about it right now. An Eshet Chayil is a phrase that shows up three times in Tanakh. Three times. Once here and twice in the book of Proverbs and Mishle. One time in the middle of Mishle, we have the simple generic phrase, Eshet Chayil Ateret Ba'ala, a valorous woman is the crown of her husband. And then there's, of course, the very famous, beautiful poem that is read traditionally on Friday night, and I mentioned in the previous podcast, and that is the Eshet Chayil, the woman of valor, which is the last 22 verses of the book of Proverbs. However, no one is identified as that Eshet Chayil. It's just a generic great woman. This is the only woman in all of Tanakh who is called, either in dialogue or by the text, an Eshet Chayil, a valorous woman. And it makes sense because, after all, Boaz, as we met back in chapter 2, verse 1, is called a Gibor Chayil. So the Gibor Chayil and the Eshet Chayil make a wonderful match. Of course, Boaz doesn't know he's Gibor Chayil. We know that. He doesn't know he's called that, so he's not deliberately saying, we have a great Shidduch here. But he says, everyone knows that you are an Eshet Chayil. And therefore, I will do everything that you have said. V'yata. Again, we'll come back to Eshet Chayil at the end. V'yata ki omnam ki goel anochi. So he says, you're right, I am a redeemer. V'gam yesh goel karov mimeni. However, there is a redeemer who is closer, meaning in the hierarchy of redemption, of kinship, there's someone who is more responsible, someone who is closer, someone who is higher in rank than I. And we already knew that because when Naomi reacted to hearing that Ruth's patron was Boaz, she said, Mi goaleinu hu. He's one of our redeemers. If he was the first in line, she would have said, Goaleinu hu, he is our redeemer. Instead, he is one of them, and he's second in line. There's a guy who's first in line. And what's his reaction? Lini halayla, stay here tonight. V'hayava boker, in the morning, im yigalech tov yigal, if he agrees to redeem you, meaning he's going to do what you've just asked of me, he will do that, then, fine. V'im lo yachpots ligalech, if he does not want to redeem you, ugaaltich anochi chay Adonai shichvi araboker. He makes it an oath by saying Hashem's name, I will redeem you, and then he says, lie here until morning. And again, that word to lie. To lie here, again, What's the intent? What's the understanding? However, remember, Boaz is a Gibor Chayil. And as I mentioned in the previous podcast, the greatest kind of Gibor is recognized in Proverbs itself. Is someone who can sublimate his own instincts. Here is Boaz alone with this beautiful woman and the granary, and certainly she doesn't seem to have been ready to protest, and nonetheless Boaz says, you stay here, stay at my feet until the morning, and I will see what happens in the morning. Vatishkav margalotah v'haboker. The text seems very clearly to be testifying that she stays away from, and they stay away from having sexual liaison. She lies at his feet, araboker. Vatakom meterem yakir ishet rehu. She got up before the point that one person could recognize another, meaning before dawn. Vayomer al yivada kivah isha hagoren. And he said to her, that you should go now. No one should know that the woman came to the Gori. Now, is he protecting his own reputation? Is he protecting her reputation? Perhaps both. He wants to make sure nobody knows that she's been there. In other words, he says, before it gets light enough for anyone to see, you should go back. Now, why didn't he send her back early? Was it because he wanted her company during the night? Or was it because it was dangerous to walk around in the middle of the night? Perhaps the latter. In any case, people should not know about it, so no, get back before it's light. And then he does something very strange. And this is something we talked about in the first chapter. I talked about the significance of the number 6 within Rut, and why 12 was the number that was used for the key words and for the occurrences of the names Naomi, Rut, and Boaz are a multiple of 6. Vayomer haviha mitpachat asher alayich. Take the scarf that you have. Vechoziva. Hold on to it. Vatochezba. She held on. Vayamod shesh seorim. It measures out 6 barleys. Now, is that 6 barley stalks, 6 barley seeds? Unclear. 6 bunches of barley? Unclear. Vayashet aleha, he puts it on her. Vayavo ayir. Vayavo is really inexact. It's vatavo ayir. She comes to the city. And now he's measured out for some reason 6. 6 barley pieces are not very much. Vatavo chamota, so she came to her mother-in-law. Vatomer mi atpiti. Her mother-in-law said, who are you? Now, that's a little bit of a strange question. She knows who Ruth is. What she really means is, are you Mrs. Boaz? You know, what happened last night? Mi apiti. Vatagavad kol asher asa la'ish. So she told her everything that Boaz did. In other words, Ruth says, I came to him. I did exactly what you said. Here's what he told me to do. Of course, she also must mention that she threw in the issue of Geulah, which changed the entire conversation. As opposed to Ruth's intent, which was Boaz and Ruth marrying and giving Ruth security and respite, instead, suddenly, there is hope for something much greater that Naomi could not have dreamed of, which is a revivification and resuscitation, as it were, of the name of the family that we thought had been lost because Elimelech was dead, his sons were dead, there were no grandchildren. Vatomer, and then Ruth says, Shesha Sorim Ha'ela, again an emphasis on these 6 pieces of barley. Natanli, Ki Amar Altavay Rekama Chamotech, he didn't want me to come empty back to you. Now remember, that's a play on Naomi's complaint at the end of chapter 1. When Naomi returned and the women said, Azot Naomi, and she said, no, call me Naomi, call me Mara, I'm embittered, God has hurt me, God has attacked me, and then she says, I went out full and God sent me back empty, Rekam. And here, it's Boaz, who again, we've seen several times, is sort of assuming the role of paying back the kindness that he says God should pay you, Yishalem Asher Lach Mulech, as he said in chapter 2 to Ruth, that you should be paid back, and then he acts to effectuate that. Here he doesn't want her to come back empty-handed, as Naomi complained about, and therefore he doesn't want him to come back home empty-handed, so he sent this barley with me. But Tomer, what's Naomi's response? Shvi v'tiar asher tedin echi pol davar. Sit and wait until we see what ends up happening. Boaz and the other redeemer. Ki lo yishkot ha'ish kim kila davar yom. He will not be silent without taking care of everything today. Meaning, Naomi knows that Boaz is going to finish this matter today. He's going to complete the business. So you could sit and wait, and now it's all going to happen very quick. Now notice how the pace of the text has changed. The first chapter happens over a long period of time, happens over maybe 12, 15 years, who knows, but well over 10 years, and it happens over a large geographic area. The second chapter happens over the course of a season, and entire harvest season, and again, there's very little clarity about where things are moving. In the third chapter, suddenly everything heats up, and the entire chapter takes place between one afternoon and the next morning, and between town and the granary and back, and that's it. And that intensification and compactness, both of time and space, will continue through the first half of the fourth chapter, supporting David Nativ's very wonderful observation about how the text of Rut takes us from the diffusion of Shoftim to the unification of David. The first words in the Megillah are Vayhi b'Meshvot HaShoftim. The last word is David. It takes us from the period of the Shoftim, which is tribalism and separation and no unification, all the way to David, which is the united monarchy. In any case, two matters that I want to discuss now with the completion of the chapter. The first one is Eshet Chayil. Eshet Chayil, which is a beautiful song of praise that we sing to our wives on Friday night, the last 22 chapters I mentioned of the book of Proverbs, if you look at it carefully, go verse by verse through the text, you could see that it could easily be applied, and I'll give you a couple examples right now, it could easily be applied to the story of Ruth herself, and we could certainly see Ruth as being the Eshet Chayil who is being sung about. First of all, she's called an Eshet Chayil. That's the first thing. Mimsa itself could be an allusion. If you recall, Lot, who is the ancestor of Rut. Remember, Lot is the head of the progenitor of the Moab, of the tribe of Moab. When he is leaving Sdom, the text says that the Malachim told Lot to get himself and his shtei v'notecha hanimtzaot, your two daughters who are still found here, as opposed to the daughters who married the cynical sons-in-law who soon were turned to salt. So Eshet Chayil miYimtza may even be an allusion to finding root somehow, the roots of root, as it were, in Sdom. Rachok mipinim ichra, her price is far beyond jewels. And again, you notice that Ruth negotiates for something far beyond money. She's looking for saving the immortality of the family. Patach ba'lev ba'ala, v'shala lo yachsar, the family lacks for nothing. Gamalatu, that's another word that Boaz used. Hashem should pay you back. So his payment is good, not bad. Right, she works with her hands. Mimerchak, in Pasuk Yodalad, from a distance. If you can take a look at Eshet Chayil in Proverbs 31, you see Mimerchak Tavi Lachma, she brings her bread from a distance. This is Ruth, who came from a distance and came to Beit Lechem. Batakum Beod Laila, she gets up in the middle of the night. Is there any other woman in Tanakh who gets up in the middle of the night like this? And I watch this. Take a look at Pasuk Yod Zayin. Chagra Be'oz Motneha. She strengthens her hips with oz, with strength. That seems to point us directly to Boaz. Boaz and Boaz are put together there. And if you look through, there's many, many associations. Of course, Pasuk Chaf Hei, Oz V'Hadar Levusha, and Torat Chesed and Pasuk Chaf Vav. Is there any greater exemplar of acting with Chesed than Ruth? So you look all the way through, and you can see that Ruth seems to be the focal point around which Eshet Chayil was composed. If we assume Solomonic composition of Mishlei, then it's very simple. He's writing in honor of his great-great-grandmother. The last verse might even help us out. Tenu la mipri adeha, give her of the fruit of her hands. V'aluha b'sha'arim ma'aseha, they praise her in the gates. The gate is where everything is going to happen in chapter 4, the key piece. And not only that, but what did Boaz say? Ki odea kol sha'arami, everyone in the gates of my nation knows that you're an Eshet Chayil. So there really is a whole lot to recommend that the Eshet Chayil of Mishlei really is a reference to Ruth. The second point I wanted to mention is about the word Lishkav. The Maharal, Yehuda Loew of Prague, 16th century, who had his own system of numerology, but points something out which seems to be really supported by much earlier sources also. And that is that the number 7 is recognized as a very significant typological number in Tanakh, which represents a full cycle, a complete cycle, whether it's a cycle of days of the week, or cycle of years of the Shemitah, or cycle of Shemitah to Yovel, or cycle of weeks to get us to Shavuot, or the full 7 days of Sukkot, or Pesach. 7 seems to be a full cycle, and Bereishit gives us that at the very beginning. So the Maharal takes that a bit further in many of his essays, and identifies 8 as being that which is one step beyond nature, to go beyond nature. And as a result, the Maharal explains that all of the nations of the world are commanded to follow seven mitzvot, the famous seven Noahide laws, Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, because all the nations of the world have to be in their natural state under the rule of God. Said, what was the next mitzvah? The next mitzvah was the eighth mitzvah. And what mitzvah was that? Brit Milah, which is a statement about going beyond nature, not accepting nature as it is, but rather say taking nature and perfecting it, improving upon what God gave. And this leads to all of the debates that the Maharal rehashes and interprets between Hellenistic thinkers and Jewish thinkers in the first couple of centuries, and famously between Rabbi Akiva and Tarnus Rufus, about whether nature as is perfect or it's our job to improve on it, which was really the core of much of the dispute with the Hellenists about how to appreciate the body and our responsibility here. As a result of that, the Maharal points out that the eighth mitzvah, which is the one that made Avraham unique, was Brit Milah, which is not to accept nature but to perfect it, and it is on the eighth day. And he makes much of that and has lots of examples to support it. That may indeed be the heart and soul of what's going on in this parak, because really both Ruth and Boaz, naturally, she would be looking for security, he would be looking for companionship, and perhaps more, and that would lead them to one result that evening, which would be a fine result. And Naomi said, Miat Biti, did he consummate the marriage? Are you married? However, each one of them rises above their natural inclinations and even natural needs. Ruth has a need for respite and security. She rises above it to work on behalf of the immortality, as it were, of a family member that she didn't even know, as we'll talk about in the fourth chapter. Boaz, once the gauntlet is thrown down that he be a redeemer, accepts the challenge, and instead of acting on personal interest and consummating and taking Ruth as a wife, he says, we've got to play by the rules, and the rules indicate that there's another Goel who's first. We've got to wait until the morning and see what happens. So the eight mentions of Lishkav, with all of the tension of whether Lishkav means to lie or to sleep, or on the other hand, to have relations, is very, very appropriate in that in this chapter, our Gibor Chayel, our hero, and our Eshet Chayel, our heroine, demonstrate their great valor, putting the greater picture and the altruistic motivation ahead of and using it to sublimate their own personal, very understandable and very justified desires and interests as their role in future Jewish history continues. We will, in the next podcast, take a look at the first half of chapter 4, and in the final podcast, complete our study of Megillat Rut. Everyone should have a wonderful day.